to the Hot Spot Podcast. We're so excited to be kicking off the school year with Corey Johnson, the Senior Manager, Program and Engagement at Safe Routes to School Partnership. We have Corey on today because I wanted her to tell us a little bit about what's going on nationally and some of the special projects that are happening in some of the rural communities. So welcome, Corey.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here and always happy to chat about Safe Route. So this should be a good conversation.
So Corey, for the folks out there who don't really know what Safe Routes is, and I should say that I know a lot about it since I'm the vice chair of the board right now, but tell us a little bit about what Safe Routes is and how it came about.
Sure. Yeah. So Safe Routes to School, it's basically a national movement and a program to make it safer, easier, and more convenient for kids to walk, bike, roll, scoot, I guess these days, to school. And so it's a national program. There are programs, Safe Routes to School programs happening across all 50 states and the District of Columbia. And like you just mentioned, this year we're celebrating 20 years of Safe Routes to School. So to go back a little bit, Safe Routes to School actually started in the United States in the 90s. It's like a few, you know, kind of one-off projects in a few cities and a few states. And then in 2005, Congress approved funding for the implementation of Safe Routes to School programs across the country, so all 50 states, you know, plus DC. And then from 2005 to 2012, there was federal funding for standalone Safe Routes to School programs. And that's really where a lot of these communities, you know, started their programs and got that foundation, both with, you know, federal funding and then also building, you know, building out their program infrastructure. Now, here we are 20 years later and still going strong. And we're still seeing new Safe Routes programs pop up and a lot of new investment in Safe Routes to School with some of the new federal infrastructure funding with Safe Streets and Roads for All and the big infrastructure bill from a few years back. So, yeah, we're excited. The momentum is, you know, continuing and that people still love Safe Routes the same way that they did 20 years ago.
So a little history note, my ex-president of the University of Miami, Donna Shalala, was the Secretary of Health under Bill Clinton. And it was her and Senator Oberstar that started the whole program.
That's awesome.
So when she was here, like, you know, I was always excited to tell her, well, that Safe Routes funding is still going strong. Anyway, so that was like a real tie to, you know, here at the university. So I had a lot of pressure to keep that Walk Safe program, you know, state of the art and, you know, in every classroom. And I guess, you know, the other thing is that, you know, we're talking to a lot of other states, being on, you know, the board and knowing about what's going on a little bit more in the country, that a lot of the funding, as you said, is going to the infrastructure projects, the build, you know, the building of the roads and the bridges and, you know, intersections. But some of the dollars that were available for non-infrastructure, which is more of the educational programming, hasn't really been there. So I know I'm working hard here in our state to try and get some of those dollars back, because I think it's a good marriage between the infrastructure and non-infrastructure of like how to use these, you know, new infrastructure projects to help get kids safer to walk, you know, bike or roll to school. So I think it's, you know, really got energy for those programs to stay together. And I think a lot of states, you know, especially what I'm doing here in Florida, we're trying to like bring those non-infrastructure dollars back into the forefront as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there are a lot of people who are thinking about the non-infrastructure side too, especially now with given how much, you know, and infrastructure projects are expensive and take a long time. Yeah. And like with some of the you know, funding cuts or funding challenges today, there are a lot of communities that are really investing back in the education, encouragement, you know, an engagement piece of Safe Routes to School. I'm thinking about, you know, what are other ways that we can support Safe Routes while still working towards these infrastructure goals? So, you know, we have like Walk and Roll to School Day coming up next month. So, you know, investing funds in events like that, or Walking Wednesdays, really, you know, kind of took off over the past few years, walking school bus programs, bike train programs, bike education programs in schools. I get a lot of emails from people asking about, you know, best practices for bike education. So it's nice to see people, really thinking about, like you said, marrying the two and realizing that the best approach to safe routes to school is really that comprehensive approach. So the engineering piece is really important, but then what can you also bring on the, you know, non-infrastructure side to create a really, you know, holistic and effective Safe Routes to School program?
So, you know, one of the things I was looking at, some of the great work you guys are doing is, you know, on our last day of our Walk Safe curriculum, we have a poster contest. So our Walk Safe program is for kids kindergarten through fifth grade. And so I see that you have this wonderful craft project. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I can share a little bit about my background before Safe Routes. So I did not come into, you know, Safe Routes to School and the partnership as a transportation expert or a planner. I actually started out as a teacher. I was a New York City public school teacher. I taught middle school in the Bronx. And then after that, I went on to work in arts education and arts administrations, working at art centers, art galleries, and then still do that, you know, on my time off as well. So I've always kind of loved art as a way to, you know, engage people, educate people, and just present another way for people to express themselves. In my regular Safe Routes work, I, you know, along with supporting you know, communities across the country, I also like to, you know, and when I have time, go and do some hands-on on the ground projects here in the DC, Maryland area where I am. And so over the past few years, I've been working with our public libraries in DC to do some like arts-based engagement around Safe Routes to School. So, you know, I'll come up and I have a, you know, bit my outreach table is full of art supplies. So I have like every, you know, I feel like I look like a little mini, you know, Michael's craft store, but, you know, come up and we'll have different, you know, like coloring activities or colorful comment boards. We did glow in the dark friendship bracelets a few months ago. And it's just, again, a way to kind of, you know, both raise awareness, get people talking and engaged, and just make safety something that's, you know, educational and also fun. So any opportunity to bring any sort of, you know, craft or creativity to a project is what I'm excited about. And what I find really interesting is that a lot of times with like those outreach tabling events, there will be people who will just, you know, we might just be doing like a simple, you know, comment board activity or coloring activity. The people just sit down and chat and they'll tell you about safety in their community and what's working, what's not working, what needs to be addressed, what they might be curious about when it comes to bike safety. But it's really about creating that space for people to come and share and talk. And I think that art is a really great way to create some of these spaces that can yield to these really helpful conversations about safety, but also about all kinds of things. So for me, like, you know, arts and, you know, crafting, that's kind of my way to, you know, bring people in and also pull out the things that they really care about.
That's really great. That's why, like, you know, I think when we set up the Walk Safe program, we always wanted to do something that was like multimedia, and with especially little kids, you know, they love to draw. So, you know, we thought definitely we had to put in something where they could, you know, create something with crayons or markers or something like that. And we always have the poster contest every year. And we usually like have a school board meeting where we'll show the winners and then the kids come and they get a prize or, you know, shoes to walk or something cool that they're going to want to show up to with their poster to get that picture in front of the school board. So yeah, no,
yeah, I think it really means a lot to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It really does. And it's a great addition to these programs. Okay, so let's move into, you know, New York. I'm in Miami. You're in, you know, sometimes in D.C. These are like major urban areas, right? What about these rural areas? What's happening across the country and what advice and recommendations are you giving to them?
So much great work is happening in rural communities. So it's funny, we're getting ready for, we're having a virtual Safe Routes to School Summit, which is like a virtual conference next month on October 28th through the 30th. And so as a part of that, event, we'll have a few sessions that are just geared towards rural communities with people from rural communities who are going to be speaking about some of their, you know, recent success stories when it comes to safe routes to school. A few great examples I can point out. Iowa Safe Routes to School has a wonderful program. Their coordinator's name is Matt Berkey, and he is so knowledgeable and passionate and does so much great work to support rural communities in Iowa. And so one of the things that he's been working on, actually, and one of the things I was kind of working on too, is last year I worked with Iowa State University to help them. I actually led a walk audit training for them so that they could go out and do walk audits across the state with the hope of improving physical activity and enhancing the built environment. So kind of like from a, you know, public health standpoint. And so we did that walk audit training. And then we had people from the Iowa State Extension Program actually go out and lead walk audits across the state. And one of the communities, I think it's Tipton, Iowa, they did their walk audit and then ended up having like a really great walk and roll to school day and are thinking about some infrastructure improvements that they can, you know, that they can work on. I've actually learned a lot from Matt, who's the Iowa State Safe Routes to School coordinator, just about how he's been able to find success in, you know, rural communities with, you know, leading bike rodeos and partnering with, you know, the local library or the local baseball team that has a, you know, a painter and can paint a little bike course, you know, on a blacktop somewhere. So a lot of like, you know, creativity and innovation. So that's been really exciting. A lot of the feedback that I've heard or advice that people have given me about working in small, you know, smaller communities, rural communities, is that engagement piece is really important. So, you know, getting people on board, making sure that people feel like they're part of the process, and, you know, starting from, you know, engagement on day, you know, day one before anything even goes on to the ground, you know, are you talking to the town mayor or the town council or the local business owner or, you know, the librarian? Who are those people in town who are like those, you know, community influencers who can really help drive a project forward? The cool thing about Safe Routes to School is that it doesn't have to look the same everywhere. You know, like every program doesn't have to be a New York or Portland or a, you know, a DC. It's really about finding a way to make a Safe Routes program work in your community.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other part of all of this is that, especially here, I'm moving back to the urban area, is one of our active communities where there's a lot of kids that walk and bike. We put together a pop-up protected bike lane, and we've written a paper about how to do this. And yes, you do need a team of people and a community that's engaged, you know, to put these things together. But I think, you know, showing a community, having them come, paint the bike lane, be out there, be excited that they're going to ride the next day or roll the next day or walk the next day in this bike lane and walking area where you can get more kids walking and biking. Are you thinking about anything else that you're encouraging communities to do together?
Safe Routes to School planning has been really successful in a lot of states and, you know, building up their program and making sure that communities have a plan in place, because a lot of times funding can be, you know, dependent on having some sort of Safe Routes plan. So working with communities to get a Safe Routes to School plan can actually be a pipeline to them being able to access Safe Routes to School funding. And there are some states that have really invested a lot in Safe Routes to School planning. So Minnesota, they have an amazing program and do a lot of planning projects. You know, Kansas does a lot of Safe Routes to School planning. So that's one thing you know, that we've been encouraging communities to think about, especially with the Safe Streets and Roads for All funding. In the past few cycles, we've encouraged communities to go out for, you know, planning and demonstration grants. And then with this last, you know, final cycle coming up next year, we'll encourage, you know, communities to focus on that. So that's been really great and exciting. And then we've also seen a lot of interest in, you know, like walking school buses and bike trains, which, you know, can kind of go with like the pop-up project. But, you know, we're also, you know, also another way to kind of get people, you know, excited and encouraged about walking, biking, and rolling, and have seen a lot of interest over the past few years in, you know, supporting our walking school bus programs and bike train programs, both from an encouragement angle and then also an education angle as well. Just what can those experiences teach you about, you know, safe walking, biking, rolling, but also what could it teach you about being a part of a community and doing something together and keeping each other safe. So that's really exciting to kind of see how different communities have, you know, organized walking and biking, or walking school buses and bike trains. And again, that's something that we've seen in our, you know, biggest cities and also rural communities who are doing, you know, walking school buses and, you know, bike rodeo events. So it really is something that can happen in every community. It might look different, but, you know, the spirit is still there.
Right. So we've talked a lot about programs and engagement. Just to sort of end off here, you know, if you're out there listening and you want to do something in your community, you know, we've been very fortunate to have the Florida Department of Transportation, the Department of Transportation funding, the Transportation Alternative Programming, the TAP funding. Can you suggest to listeners where else to go for resources and funding to do some of these things in their communities?
So I've been exploring kind of like these smaller pots of funding that people can use to do something that can like be really impactful. You know, like, you know, what can you do with a few thousand dollars maybe? Is there a local nonprofit that's fund small projects? There was a community in, I think it was Durango, Colorado, where the Rotary Club, I think did like, you know, gave a small amount of funding for bike racks at a local high school. They had been doing like their own, you know, kind of like walk safety assessment independently and ended up linking up with Durango Safe Routes to School and said, hey, you know, there aren't bike racks in the high school. Let's use some of our funding just to fund, you know, bike racks at, you know, at the local high school. And for a community like Durango, where lots of kids bike, lots of mountain biking, like that bike storage piece was actually really impactful. And that was just something that came from, you know, the local Rotary Club. So, you know, one idea is just to kind of see who's in your, you know, who's in your community and think about those small pots of funding that can lead to something really, you know, really big. I think people are, you know, I think thinking about a bike rack is something that's very, you know, actionable, tangible. People can envision it. It won't take 5 years, 10 years to do. It's like, oh, here's the funding and the bike racks are here in a few weeks. And people like to support projects like that, right? That are highly impactful, highly visible, you know, that are very immediate. So I would say definitely look at your, you know, local network and see what opportunities are out there to fund, you know, really small projects. And also, like, I think that, you know, the heart of Safe Routes to School is really about keeping, you know, kids safe. And I think that leading with kids and with child safety and with thinking about young people as, you know, some of our most vulnerable road users is also a really compelling way of not only keeping momentum, but really making the case for why Safe Routes to School is important. So looking about other organizations or other people who want to support kids and kid safety, I think that can be another angle for bringing more resources into your program. And then just, you know, like I said, who are those local partners in town? The past 2 years, I've been working on a Safe Routes to Libraries initiative, which I'm really excited about as a library lover. And it's been really cool to see our local libraries are actually like already doing a lot of Safe Routes work. They're not necessarily calling it Safe Routes, but, you know, they have, you know, bike lending libraries and bike racks at their libraries or library walking groups. And so I've been trying to encourage people to connect with their local libraries and see, you know, what types of Safe Routes programs or projects or activities that they can do and, you know, kind of combining those resources. So yeah, those are a few of my tips. So start small, see who's in your community, talk to the library. Librarians are also really well connected and know a lot of people and see the entire community.
So we can't leave this conversation because every staff meeting we have, we look at our number and our data and, you know, we see that, you know, the kids that are like, you know, 11 to, I don't know, 14, 15, we've got a new, you know, sort of mobility system in our midst, which is these e-bikes, e-scooters, right? And we're trying to like wrap our arms around, you know, how do we put out safety tips about this? We came out with a white paper. You know, what are you guys at Safe Routes talking to all these communities about as far as e-bike, e-scooter safety? What direction are you going in?
Yeah, good question. So something else that we're covering at our Safe Routes to School Summit, we're going to have this whole session about e-bike safety that'll have Allison Dewey from League of American Bicyclists. So she'll kind of be on to talk about their new e-bike safety report. And then we'll have two Safe Routes practitioners. So Gwen Froh from Marin Safe Routes to School, which has kind of been like the, you know, leader in e-bike safety for the past few years. And then Megan Ramey from Hood River, Oregon. And then Jennifer Bradley from UL, who's one of our summit sponsors, are going to be on talking a bit about e-bike safety. And what we've heard is that communities are working through it. There's definitely nobody who's figured everything out, but there's a lot of good work that's happening. So I think that, so Marin County, they actually developed their own, like a special youth safety e-bike task force. And they've been working for the past few years around new e-bike guidance and some educational, you know, materials and a huge, you know, safety campaign all around keeping students safe on, you know, on e-bikes. There's also a national e-bike, like safety work group comprised of Safe Routes practitioners from across the country, and they've been meeting on a regular basis to kind of talk through some of these challenges, develop some e-bike guidance. Of course, it's hard because, you know, like it's different in every, you know, in every state. So there's, you know, the legal piece, you know, definitely includes some, you know, adds some variations to e-bike safety. I guess what I've heard from people who've been, you know, kind of deep in this work is that they don't want e-bikes to be, you know, to like to be something that's punitive, right? Like we don't want it to be, you know, something where you just tell kids, you know, don't go on e-bikes and they won't do it. It's really about how do you keep kids safe on e-bikes. So safety, just, you know, leading with that message. And then also a lot of education for parents and caregivers around e-bikes, because we find that, you know, a lot of, you know, parents are buying e-bikes for their students and not knowing how powerful these devices are, how fast they go, how dangerous they can be, what the law actually is. So a lot of these educational materials that have been coming out are also for not just young people, but for, you know, caregivers, parents, school administration, you know, other adults in the community, just to educate them about e-bike safety.
Tor, just to finish up, how do people find you and want to give some information?
Yeah, for sure. So you can always visit us on our website is saferoutespartnership.org. But that's where we, you know, kind of have all of our Safe Routes to School resources. We have resources on our federal policy, federal funding, our Safe Routes to Parks and Safe Routes to Libraries program. We do a lot of webinars. I'm actually the person who facilitates a lot of our webinars. So if you ever want to join a webinar, you'll probably see me and are, yeah, welcome to kind of dive into some of our webinar topics. So that is where you can find us.
Okay, great. So thank you for joining us to kick off our Back to School podcast. I just want to tell the audience to stay tuned and stay safe.